You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the Boomerang Geo Podcast from WFAN.
And we're coming to you live for the Built for Tough Studio. Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti. It's Boomerang Geo on the Fan, simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. And wherever you are on the free Odyssey app, good Monday morning. One of the busier Mondays I can ever remember. We've got a couple of losses we have to dissect from last night. But as we move ahead this morning and into later today, we've got Yankees playoff baseball. We've got Mets playoff baseball. And we got the Jets playing for first place on Monday Night Football. It was pretty ugly yesterday, though. There's no two ways about it. Mets get off to a miserable start in this NLCS. Kodai Senga can't throw a strike. It's frustrating as hell. The Mets' bats go completely silent. But you flush it. You move on. I'm not too concerned after that performance, to be honest with you. I really think that this team can bounce back. Take one, then you got three at home. But that was brutal. And I don't know. Carlos Mendoza, I love him to death, but there's two guys that he just believes in too much, and that's Edwin Diaz and Kodai Senga. Then you get the Giants last night, who have 8 million opportunities on offense. They just can't get it done. Missed field goals, can't convert on fourth down, throwing miserable interceptions at the goal line. The Giants defense did absolutely everything to keep themselves in that game and keep that team in the game against an offense that had been rolling, but just not enough. And obviously the Giants offense is just rough, especially without Malik Nabers. All right. Good morning, Boomer. How are you? Let's get into it.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing, G?
Great, man. Great.
I'm over here picking up the pieces.
Picking up the pieces.
There's a lot of broken pieces right now.
Picking up the pieces.
The good thing for the Mets is that they get to play today at 4 o'clock. Yeah. I don't know what the hell Major League Baseball's thinking about. You know, the Yankees and the Mets should be flipped. I mean, just because the Mets, are they going to have a chance to get a good night's sleep? What's going to happen? I mean, let's just show up right away. And
they'll be okay.
Maybe that's the best thing for the Mets because, as you said, Kodai Senga couldn't find a strike zone. We all saw it. We all witnessed it. He threw 30 pitches. 10 of them were actually in the strike zone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was horrendous. Horrendous! And, you know, I know, give him credit. He's out there. He's trying to do his part. He's trying to be a part of a winning team and gave a winning performance against the Phillies. But the Dodgers were all over him, especially, you know, after he walks the bases loaded. I mean, you know, the game's over. I felt like the game was over right there. Even thinking that the Mets have this special thing about late game comebacks that never, ever even remotely materialized. So it was a bad game. It was horrendous. We'll talk about it today, but I'm more worried about what's going to happen at 4 o'clock today.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, getting one in L.A. is the priority, and you didn't get the first one. And now you got this opportunity with Manaea on the mound, and they're going to have a bullpen game, and you really want to split and then come home for three at Citi Field. And you talk about everybody having skin in the game, and it's been a theme of yours with the Knicks and others and the Jets. But this Senga thing, we didn't love the first time, but it kind of worked out. But to toss him out there again, I mean, I know it feels like a second guess, but I've just been all over just Carlos Mendoza and Carlos We Trust. But it just Senga out there, he really faced nobody. To throw him out in a game one against the Dodgers lineup like that, and he's throwing balls all over the place, It felt like it set the tone for what was going to be a miserable night.
Yeah.
And I just wonder how he's... I'm with you on moving on, trust me. because he got a game, 1 o'clock out there, 4 o'clock here. Let's go get the win. Still have faith in them, not losing faith in them. But I like why so much trust in a guy who has pitched like nothing? We haven't seen him at all.
Well, I mean,
and now what's his role going to be going forward?
They'll try to spot use him if they can. And again, they also made the decision to bring back Jeff McNeil, not to play and start and all that other stuff, but he's going to be a guy that's going to come off the bench. He came off the bench late last night. Get in that bag. You never know when that's going to be important. And they decided to drop Adam Ottavino, which I don't think there's an argument about any of that. But they lose an arm in the bullpen in a case like last night's game. That's the thing that you always worry about is in these games and in these series is making sure that you have your pitchers lined up right and everybody's doing well. And even, David Peterson last night, he started to get hit. The Dodgers are a really good team. They're a really good team. I think they're much like the Yankees in a sense that during the season, they're so good. Everybody gives them their best shot and they're going to lose games due in large part to injuries, especially to their starting staff. And the strength of their team is their clutch hitting, and it's going to be their bullpen. So now they will do a bullpen game today. And everybody's like, oh, bullpen game, we got this. I hope so.
Their last bullpen game didn't give up a run.
They haven't given up a run in, three straight games now or four straight games?
Yep.
They are loaded in the bullpen. And this is like, if there were ever a team that was based on analytics and based on matchups and everything else, it is the Los Angeles Dodgers. And the fact that Flaherty did pitch as well as he did just cements the fact that they made the right trade at the trade deadline.
Yeah, and it was like at the 11th hour where they ended up getting Flaherty. He was unhittable last night. He was just...
Curveball was killing him.
Right. I mean, in the difference between watching those two pitchers in the beginning where... Flaherty is attacking with confidence, and Kodai Senga's nibbling and throwing balls. It just set a tone. If Senga started or Peterson started or it doesn't matter who started, it wasn't going to matter, I think, last night. I think Flaherty was too good. You didn't score any runs. I just felt like it set a bad tone with Senga. But hell, if you would have lost that game, 3-2 in 15 innings, or you would have gotten blown out like you did last night, you still got to come out here and win and take the game. So,
and they're used to stuff like this.
I do not look at last night as the Mets are overmatched in this series after getting their asses kicked.
Yeah,
9-0
wouldn't tell you that.
No way. What?
9-0 wouldn't tell you that.
Here's
the one thing I'm saying.
You feel like they're overmatched now?
This was like the worst game they've played in 6 weeks, and maybe it was because of the extended, this little extended 2-day layoff or 3-day layoff. It shouldn't have been much.
Yeah.
But there was something to be said about them, traveling all up and down the East Coast, going to Milwaukee, going to Atlanta, going to Milwaukee, going back to Atlanta, going to Philadelphia. I mean, and we were making fun of it that they hadn't slept in their bed yet, and they did. And there's something to be said about just the team being together, traveling around, doing things that nobody expected, and then having these incredible moments where you galvanize the team. And then all of a sudden, now we got the first game of the NLCS, and you're sitting there going, they haven't played in 3 days. And it's been a lot of talking done, and it kind of takes them out of whatever rhythm. And I thought last night, with the way that Flaherty started the game, was more eye-opening to me than the way that Senga did. I mean, because Flaherty was so good.
Yeah.
And then you couple that with Senga being so bad that I never felt like the Mets ever had a chance in this game.
No, yeah, I'm with you. But do you feel now, after just because of this one game, that they're overmatched with the Dodgers?
I will say this. It comes down to winning today's game. I believe that they have to win today's game. I really, they have to win it. I mean, I know teams have come back, but they have to win this game.
Okay.
And if you talk to a Dodger fan, and I have one in my life, don't talk to him quite as much as I used to, but he'll tell you that the strength of their team is what they're doing today. It's going to be their bullpen arms. And you don't get to see them a second time or third time around. I mean, you get to see if they all do their job, they may get four outs or they may only get three outs.
Yeah. You know, two of the most frustrating things that you can watch as a sports fan.
The Giants?
Were happening, right. Well, were happening last night. Is for me, there's two things. There's a whole list. We all have a whole list of things that drive us nuts. But two of that are right at the top of that list. You have a pitcher who can't throw strikes. You're just screaming at the TV, throw a goddamn strike. And another thing is when you have an NFL team that can't score and has all these opportunities to do so, and they can't do it. You know, and then they're missing field goals, and then they're throwing horrendous interceptions at the goal line with a defender in your face. Let me just throw it up into the middle of the field for the hell of it. No. I mean, for God's sakes, 4th and 3, you know, drop pass, and they're moving the ball. They're moving the ball.
Drop pass, that was an inaccurate
throw. All right. Sorry. I'm just, incomplete pass.
So Daniel Jones last night, if you really boil it down and you watch some of these throws, they were woefully inaccurate. I mean, even one of the great things about Tom Brady and how great he was the accuracy in which he threw the ball. And sometimes it was low and into the ground because he wanted to protect his wide receiver, or it was high and away, the back shoulder throw that we often talk so much about. And then there's Daniel Jones, who has opportunity after opportunity to make a play or go through his progression, and sometimes he locks on to guys, and it may only be like 6 or 7 throws a game, but those 6 or 7 throws a game are the difference between scoring 7 points and 28 points. And he did it again last night. He did it in the red zone when BJ Hill hit him. He has his running back wide open in the flat. I know that they're trying to run a play. And he's probably not looking at that running back. That running back is probably part of the camouflage of a particular play, and he's going to come back and he's going to throw a touchdown pass. But B.J. Hill killed the Giants last night.
Yep.
And he hits Daniel, and it ends up an interception. That 4th down throw to Slayton, yeah, the DB for the Bengals is right there, but the ball's behind him. He doesn't have a chance to make a play on it. Like, he can get his hands on it, but the defender is, like, right there.
Yeah.
And when you watch Joe Burrow play and you watch him, now he had this amazing touchdown run last night.
Yeah, I mean, how is that even happening?
All right,
where there's no Giants to be seen.
I'll tell you, because Chris Collinsworth explained it perfectly. What ends up happening is that defenses play. So Shane Bowen calls a man coverage defense.
Yeah.
And when you have a man coverage defense and you have 5 men rushing, that means you have nobody to protect the quarterback. And if the quarterback, like Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen, I can think of Joe Burrow, is one of these guys, doesn't run as much, but you got to remember, he was an all-state point guard in the state of Ohio, as a high school player. So he's a great athlete. He just never really shows it a lot. He'd rather just stay behind the line of scrimmage. But you saw that he read the defense perfectly, and he's got everybody on his team to the left side of the left hash. And 5 guys are rushing, and he breaks through and sees nobody there. So that's how it happens. It's the defense that Shane Bowen called. But by the way, their defense played great last night. The fact that you held them to 17 points.
Yeah, I mean,
that is an unbelievable defensive performance by the Giants, who, again, once again, are victimized, especially at home, by a team that can't get into the end zone.
Yeah, and Collinsworth also said, you know, on that Chase Brown touchdown run to make it 17-7, it's like the Giants defense, they were there, they hung in, they played their ass off until it just finally broke on that run.
Well, it was after the 4th down play that the Giants couldn't convert. So,
right.
You know, all of a sudden, all the momentum and all the emotion is out of that defense, and I thought the defense played really well last night. I thought that the Giants were competitive, you know, and not that that's anything for an NFL team, but again, just the inaccurate throws. And part of me, I don't know, maybe this is just me, and I admire Daniel Jones for his toughness, but I don't want him lowering his shoulder when he's running, especially with coming off of a knee injury and neck injury. And Collinsworth was talking about it last night. He goes, did you know this guy had a knee injury? I don't know how many times he said it last night.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not what a quarterback's supposed to be doing. And I'm like, is he running to get hurt?
Yeah, I mean, it's with all the injuries that he's had, basically Joe Shane told him, listen, the reason why we were trying to draft a quarterback is because you've been hurt so much, and he plays still with this reckless abandon. And you know what's extra frustrating, too, about last night is that this NFC East is not a good division right now. Now, the Commanders are much better than we thought, and they hung in there with the Ravens. But the Cowboys stink, and I don't think the Eagles are very good either. So the Giants had a real opportunity to continue to keep themselves in a conversation with the division. And they still are, because I don't think the division's all that good. But a win last night, man, that would have gone a long way into making the fan base believe that they actually could have snuck into the playoffs somehow. So, and I don't know, like the Cowboys, Rob Saleh's got to be thinking to himself, Mike McCarthy's still got a job and I got fired 5 games in. I mean, what the hell? I thought he'd be done by last night on Jerry's 82nd birthday. They get their asses handed to him in the way that they did.
Yeah, wow.
Woo!
I would just say that there are a number of teams out there that are woefully disappointing, and a lot of it can be traced to how their quarterback has been playing. Jared Goff has been playing out of his mind. And, yeah, you know, they lose Aiden Hutchinson, which is really unfortunate. But that team is one of the best teams in football. And Jared Goff and Ben Johnson, their offensive coordinator, who may not be there next year. He may be a new head coach somewhere, and probably should be. But it's not good. I could see Ben Johnson going to Jacksonville. Yeah. I could see that guy going to Jacksonville and trying to get Trevor Lawrence right. That would be the place where I would think he would go. I don't think he would go, like, if the Cowboy job opened up. You know, is obviously a job that everybody would covet, but I would think that it also comes with a whole other level of just tension and anxiety because of who owns the team. And he gives a press conference after the game is over, does 2 press conferences during the week. I mean, no other owner does that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Right. And he's been doing it for years, and he's got a weekly radio show. I mean, it's a lot. So that Cowboys story, of course, is going to be a big one throughout the country. Not as big here as we talk a ton about the Mets and Giants to get you ready for Yankees, Mets, and Jets tonight.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. All right, Jerry, I know you got it all, so let's get right into it. Not a real happy Monday, but plenty of audio for us. What's going on, Jerry?
There is a lot, and we are brought to you by Hard Rock Bet. Download the Hard Rock Bet app and roll with us. We're also brought to you by Jackpocket. Order official state lottery games on your phone. We'll start with the baseball last night in Los Angeles, and it did not take the Dodgers long to get the jump on the Mets.
Here's the 2-1 pitch. Swing and a liner to right center field. It's in for a base hit. Betts scores. Freeman right behind him. Taylor's throw to the plate. Cut off by Alonso with the mound. Freeman scores. Hernandez stops at second. And on at first with a 2-run single is Max Muncy. And the Dodgers have a 2-0
lead. That's where they needed the double play, right there. Maybe they
saved it. Well, it was 2 outs there. There was actually 2 outs.
Two outs out there. He got the fly ball just prior to that.
And yeah, and how Mookie Betts didn't score.
Yeah.
You know what would have been really good? Don't walk 3 guys in a row.
Yeah.
How about that?
And then that's what happens. And it feels like, you know, you've got the bases loaded. You got to throw strikes.
And he laid that one right over the plate. And Muncy crushed it.
Yep.
And by the way, you know, 30 pitches for Senga, only 10 strikes.
Yeah. He's walking in the ballpark.
Too bad.
I'm still confused by this decision to pitch him like this. It just doesn't make sense to me. But
it's almost like the entire year, they're like, man, like, what if we, imagine if we had Senga? Imagine we had Senga. Then he makes himself available. It's like, oh, my God, this is the greatest thing ever. Let's throw him out there.
Well, we weren't saying this after, you know, he gave up the home run to Schwarber, and then he shut them down. And he pitched well. For 2 innings.
I didn't like it then. I don't like it now.
All right, but they won that game. They lost this game. Now you got to turn the page. Time to turn the page. We got to turn page. Everybody's talking about turning pages.
Well, yeah. Before
I'm all about turning the page.
I got to read the page before I turn the page.
No, I'm turning the page. Let's go.
So that's it. 9-0. Move on.
No. Well, again, you got some things in there that need.
I'm reading the page.
Need to be heard.
9-0 was the final. Here was Carlos Mendoza. So what was up with your starter?
Yeah, he was off. You know, he didn't have it. He didn't have the life on his fastball and a lot of balls out of hand. You know?
Yeah, a lot balls. of balls out of his hand.
Balls. He's talking just like he's from New York now.
Yeah, no, that was amazing.
Oh, man. Here was Senga through his translator. Mechanics, is that why velocity was down?
Yes, I do think that is a big factor. But now I just need to reflect back on what happened today and make adjustments so I can have a better outing next time.
Next time, 2025, I hope.
I'd be surprised to see him starting like game six or something.
I think he would line up for five.
He's going to start one of those games if it gets that far. Hopefully it will. Hopefully today the Mets will turn the page.
Turn the page.
Flush it. Yep.
Ohtani, an RBI single in the second and in the fourth. Mookie Betts, a big three-run double in the eighth. Here was Jesse Winker. The Mets did nothing. Didn't have a hit till the fifth inning, as a matter of fact. He says props to Jack Flaherty, who was pretty dominant.
Yeah, he pitched really well. He was, you know, controlling his fastball, controlling his off-speed pitches, had good tempo. We just couldn't really get him off his rhythm. You know, hats off to him. He did his thing tonight.
And that's 33 consecutive scoreless innings from LA pitching. Here was their catcher, Will Smith, on Flaherty's outing.
Yeah, that was awesome by Flair. Give us 7 shutout, you know, set the tone. We needed that. He really stepped up and, you know, gave us a really good start.
And so is the tone set now? I always hear the set the tone. Like, within the game, I guess the tone was set.
Yeah.
But the tone was set more by Senga than it was by... I mean, Flaherty was great. Don't get me wrong.
It was a double tone set.
Agreed.
I mean, they were the opposite ends of the spectrum.
Senga sucked, and Flaherty was fantastic.
He was attacking.
Yeah,
I mean, and just so confident. Every pitch was working, and Senga's just out throwing balls.
Nibbling,
throwing balls.
He wasn't even nibbling, dude.
He's nibbling his balls.
He was so far out of the strike zone, you couldn't say that he was nibbling.
There were a couple, the 3-2, I forget who it was, the 3-2 pitch that walked the bases loaded, I thought could have been a strike if I'm thinking of the right one. But you're right, he was all over the place last night.
With that one in the dirt, too, that Smoltz goes, I mean, that was just...
59 feet.
He's like, yeah, he threw that one like...
49 feet.
That was 49 feet, yeah.
Did it reach the dirt?
Barely.
I mean, you know what Francisco Alvarez is back there like a goalie in the NHL.
He did a good job, I thought.
I thought he did for the most part, even though he's one of the worst in the league
at doing
throughout Ohtani too.
How about that? First time he's been thrown out since July, I believe.
Maybe that's a sign of things to come.
Mm. Maybe there's a tone set for you.
Yeah.
You ain't running on Alvarez. All right, game two today, 4:00. Sean Manaea, the start for New York. LA to use a bullpen deal for this one. As for the ALCS, it begins after that with the Yankees and Guardians at the stadium. Carlos Rodon with the start for New York. There's been a lot written about social media. His wife, I guess, threats against him and his wife has not been good, as you can imagine. Human filth. Here was Rodon. He's not paying any attention to it.
I have accounts, but I do not have social media on my phone, just so you guys know. For good reason, for reasons like that. So I don't look at it. And I think that's a good way to go about it, especially as the athlete.
Also,
you got to tell your wife not to look at it.
Yes.
Just get off of social media so that you don't, like, stupid stories like this don't come out. And then then all of a sudden the athlete's got to answer the questions when he should be talking about the game. When are people going to learn?
So here's the good and the bad of being off social media. So when I leave here, I don't usually look at it too much, and I don't on the weekends at all. That's the good. The bad is I was playing golf Saturday when I saw that the Guardians were playing. When did they change that? I had no idea because I didn't.
They moved it up?
I guess because of the weather. I thought the game was at 7 o'clock. I did not know that the game was being played because I had no other outlet to find out.
Honestly, social media is only good when the NHL decides to change its rules right before the season starts and doesn't tell anybody that there are new rules now in the NHL. And they're specifically designed to screw the Rangers and Matt Rempe. I don't know why.
6:31. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
I
did see the melee from the other day.
I mean, melee.
or whatever you want to call it.
What an absolute embarrassment.
Alex Cobb will pitch for the Guardians tonight. We will have it for you on the Fan first pitch right after 7:30. All right, we get to the NFL.
I had nothing to do with it, man.
Sunday Night Football, kind of a bore fest, to be quite honest. But you did get an early touchdown, and not with his arm, from one Joe Burrow.
Bengals audibilizing at the line. Burrow takes the snap, drops straight back, and he's going to run, and there he goes. He's going to get a first down and more to the 30, 20, 15, 10, 5, dives for the pylon, and he's in for the touchdown, 47 yards for Joe Burrow, the longest run of his career.
Bob Papa with the call right here on the
Bob Popper. Yeah, how does he know that quickly it's the longest run of his career?
It's probably written in his little sheet.
Yeah, I think that's
a good note to have, though.
But I think the longest run prior to that was 24. And I'm sure that he had read it somewhere along the line, because he had a run earlier in the game, too, for a first down.
Yeah.
So he probably had it on the tip of the tongue.
Yeah, good preparation.
47 yards, a long one for him. Yeah. And when they showed you the replay from behind, there was nobody there.
That's what happens when it's man coverage.
Yeah.
And you're rushing five.
Let me ask you this. Could you actually design a play to get everybody to one side so that the other side of the field is that free?
It's not that was not a called play, but if I had to guess, I want to say, if I'd have to look at it again, I want to say that Isaiah Simmons was involved in the rush, and he was the one that was chasing him down the sideline. He's probably the one that is required to watch the quarterback and not just like completely forget about him. You know what I mean? And just try to get the pass rush and try to get the sack.
Well, Burrow wound up throwing for 208 yards. 17-7 was the final. Chase Brown added a 30-yard touchdown run in the fourth quarter, a few plays after he had scored, but it was wiped away because of a penalty. As for Daniel Jones, 22 of 41, 205, and that one interception that was deep into Cincinnati territory. Here was Jones. What happened on that play?
Trying to get the ball out of the back of the end zone. Got hit. Got to throw it earlier. Get the ball down.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't get down, and it was picked off, and that killed scoring chance.
He had his running back wide open in the right flat. I think Chris Collinsworth did point it out, and these are decisions that Daniel, you know, especially, look, B.J. Hill beat his man, and he got back there quickly, and I don't think Daniel was ready for it, and ultimately it was because of that hit that the ball was intercepted. But if he just drops it off to his running back in the flat right now, boom. And, you know, on that fourth down play, they throws to Slayton. I think it's Wandell Robinson is coming in right in behind Slayton, wide open. You know, sometimes you can't just, like, pre-think that you're going to throw a ball somewhere because you've had success with that earlier in the game. It's fourth down. You got to make a ball. You want to make a throw. You don't want to get sacked. You don't want to get hit. But if he just waits a tad longer, this guy coming wide open right in behind Slayton, that's probably still running.
And as bad as it was for them not being able to score, down 10-7, Greg Joseph did miss a 47-yard field goal. And so the Giants 2-4. The Bengals now 2-4. The Jets 2-3. They play the 3-2 Bills tonight. Here's Quinnen Williams. How to go forward with new leadership now. Of course, we know Rob Saleh was fired last week. Jeff Ulbrich, the interim head coach.
Really, man, you just keep the main thing man. You just focus on the thing that matters, and that's winning football games. And that's getting better every single week and every single day. As personal goals and as a team goal, man, you want to win football games and you want to win.
And so that game will start about a half hour after the Yankees. Maybe a little more than
the main thing.
Yeah,
I mean, we're gonna be locked into sports from 4 o'clock on.
You will be.
As big of a day as there possibly could be
around here. Yeah, it's pretty good. Elsewhere around the league, you mentioned the Cowboys. Things not going so good right now for them.
Third and shame for the Lions from the 37 of Dallas. They lead this one 27-6. First drive, third quarter. There's the shotgun snap to Goff. Back, looking, throwing right side. Got a man out there.
Go, baby!
Touchdown, Detroit Lions! Oh, baby! Goff with a rainbow! Williams hauls it in, and the Lions add to their lead.
And very quickly in the third quarter, too. Dan Miller, Lions Radio, 47-9.
Jerry, that was an ass-kicking.
Get your damn act together.
Jerry, that was an ass-kicking.
Okay.
That's like three in a row at home now.
It's four in a row. If you go back to the Packers playoff game where they scored 48
points.
I'm talking
about this year.
Yeah, but their last four home games, they've given up 160-something points.
Now, you have missed a couple defensive players in this game.
Micah Parsons was out.
Yes.
DeMarcus Lawrence was out.
I mean, that's big when you're missing those guys and you're playing against a team like
the Lions, who are a great offensive team.
The only thing I would say to the contrary is they did have those guys for the Saints game and the Ravens game.
And they got smacked around there, too.
And the Packer playoff game.
I don't like your attitude.
I don't either. You know, I'll tell you what, Jerry, you better pick it up.
Here was Jerry, since Eddie's playing some of his clips. Well, that was kind of bad.
This was a shocker. I thought we would do a lot of things better in that football game, and I think we can. We just didn't do them out there today. So I don't have a lot of answers. What are you going to do about it? We're going to go to work.
Okay, well, they do have the bye week, so they can go to work. Then Aiden Hutchinson was injured.
If you're
going to
fire the coach, you'd do it now, right?
Yep. Would have to be like now, this morning.
He's not going to.
I'm so pissed.
Are you sure?
I'm not sure of anything. That's what he said. He said he wasn't even contemplating it when he was asked about making changes.
McCarthy's wake. Want me to come in today? What are we doing here? Because I could stay here. I'm totally fine with staying home.
I mean, they are 500. It's not like they're, you know.
They've given up 120 points in three home games.
Which is unbelievable.
And what did you say about the Seahawks, who are 3-3?
They're paper tigers.
All right. So I don't know what the Cowboys are, but they beat a mediocre Steeler team. Is that fair?
Okay. Justin Fields.
They beat the Giants.
Daniel Jones, yeah, who can't score a touchdown at home.
And they beat Deshaun Watson and the Browns.
Right. I mean, so they beat the teams they're supposed to beat.
You could say that. The team of the Saints shouldn't have beaten the Saints.
Well, you know, we all thought that the Saints had turned the corner.
They didn't turn nothing. So
there's a viral video from the game yesterday in the stands of a female Cowboys fan wearing a Cowboys jersey throwing up.
On all fours.
Throwing up like on you know,
on the promenade. She's not even in the bathroom.
Right. And her boyfriend is holding her hair up as she's puking. And the best part about it is there's a guy in a Lions David Montgomery jersey that walks by her while she's puking, doing the gritty. It is unbelievable.
Nothing says NFL 2024 kind of like that.
Oh, it's all the elements right there. All the elements.
How embarrassing.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the Eagles did beat the Browns 20-16. Jalen Hurts, Devontae Smith, the deciding score. You also had Nick Sirianni.
This guy's bizarre.
And
by the way, we're doing this game next week.
Yes.
So the good news for the Eagles is they got both of their wide receivers back.
Correct.
And they both had a major impact in yesterday's game.
I would say so, although I thought they would roll. That was a hard game to win.
Well, the Browns are hanging on. I mean, you talk about a desperate team. I'm thinking that Myles Garrett's going to kill somebody.
He might. He might. The Ravens did beat the Commanders 30-23. Entertaining game there. And you talk about fired, not fired. Boy, the Jaguars did not look good yesterday in London, losing big to the Bears. Preseason basketball, Knicks beat the T-Wolves 115-110. I bring it up because you had the Dante DiVincenzo, Rick Brunson back and forth. The audio is, I can't even play it. It's brutal. You can't even hear DiVincenzo.
Yeah, but there was a couple people online found the audio and were able to clean it up. You could hear it.
It started with him at the foul line yelling at Tibbs.
I meant the postgame stuff.
Yeah, right.
The postgame stuff, the audio is not good enough to play.
Right.
And you can't understand him.
You're going to yell at Rick Brunson, Jalen Brunson's dad? I mean, I thought you guys were tight.
Best friends, he said. Tight.
Yeah. It started with him on the foul line yelling at Tibbs. Then Brunson said something to DiVincenzo about that. And then you could hear DiVincenzo say to Brunson, I was talking to Tibbs.
Yes.
And then they got back, you know.
And then there was a thing with Julius Randle on one of the assistants, too, with the Knicks that I see the video that's out there.
Well, obviously, those guys are upset that they got traded. There's no question about that. I understand that. We all understand that. They're trying to put a good face on it. You know, the one thing I will say for DiVincenzo, he's going to start in Minnesota now.
And Anthony Edwards seems pretty pumped to have him.
Yeah, exactly. So it may work out for everybody involved. But the Knicks felt like they had an opportunity to get a center who is a shooting center, much like Embiid is, much like Giannis is. And they swung, and they had to give something up to get something.
And that's what they did. And the Liberty beat the Lynx 80-66, series tied 1-1.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Mets lose, Giants lose, and we turn our attention to the Yankees, game two of the Mets and the Jets tonight. If you want to join the show, 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. 101.9. And I think most people, including some of the gaming folks and the guys who make picks, think that the Jets are going to get a boost tonight from the coaching change. And I kind of agree with that, that they will at least be a little bit more inspired. I think that it just shakes up everybody. It puts everybody on notice when the guy that's been the head coach there for years all of a sudden gone in the middle of the season like this. Jeff Ulbrich is a guy with a ton of energy. They've looked like hell the last couple of weeks, the Jets. So this is a critical situation for them. They're playing for first place. The Bills are, I don't know, nobody can swing peaks and valleys like the Buffalo Bills can swing peaks and valleys. So I do think they get a boost from this at home. But, you know, really, and I guess Jay Glazer said yesterday that they're going to be a run-dominant team tonight. And I mean,
well, this is what Todd good luck. Downing, well, they're going to try to run, and they're going to try to be dominant, especially with Ed Oliver not playing for the Buffalo sure. Bills. It's a big loss for them. But what Todd Downing will do, and what I expect him to do, and one of the reasons why they were removing Nathaniel Hackett is because I kind of envision, you know, meetings not going very smoothly, guys out on the practice field making mistakes, and then taking those mistakes to the playing field and thinking that Aaron Rodgers is so good that he could just, you know, do whatever he wants out there and call whatever play he wants and throw a back shoulder throw or throw a deep ball down the sideline and come up with it. I think they're going to have more, they should have more of a plan that is going to be, believe it or not, a little bit simpler. And what I mean by that is they are going to try to run the ball, and there's going to be more play action. So I think Jay's assessment is probably right. This is what I felt like when they handed the reins over to Todd Downing. Okay, you've called plays for Tennessee. You had Ryan Tannehill. You had Derrick Henry. You know, here you have Aaron Rodgers. You have Breece Hall. You have Braylon Allen. You have all the elements and a good offensive line that you had in Tennessee. So that's exactly why Jay says that. That's exactly why anybody who's watched the Jets over the last two weeks feels like that's going to be the direction they're going to go.
Now, they've had a real tough time running the football so far this year, so we'll see if that changes. But it truly is, and I know we've been through it and living through it, but it really is amazing that all of this talk about getting Aaron Rodgers here and everybody flying out there and promises with Nathaniel Hackett and this and that Aaron Rodgers is going to have Rob Saleh as the head coach and Nate Hackett as the offensive coordinator. They play five games. Like, forget about last year in four plays. They play five games, and now Aaron Rodgers got Jeff Ulbrich as the head coach, Todd Downing as the offensive coordinator. I mean, it truly is. Now, I'm not saying I disagree, because I didn't think Rob Saleh was a good coach, and Nate Hackett seems like he's a completely lost. But it truly is amazing. After years, it's been years now we were talking about this, that Aaron Rodgers signed up for that. Like, Rob Saleh's there at his house. Joe Douglas is there at his house. Woody Johnson, Christopher Johnson. And Nate Hackett's going to be there, his buddy. And Rob Saleh's going to be the head coach. They got a relationship. Five games it lasted. Five.
All right. Yeah, but you also have to remember, in the offseason, they were looking for somebody to be on top of the offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. To kind of, you know, run the meetings and, you know, make sure everybody's on the same page. And it is so vital for offenses to be able to be on that same page. And the last 2 weeks, it didn't look that way. In the last 2 weeks, it looks like it was a little bit scattershot. A lot of mistakes that were made, whether they were penalties, whether they were turnovers, whether Aaron Rodgers played well, the team didn't play well, they didn't try to run the ball, Breece Hall looked lost. I mean, and I, for one, and I said this last week and I'll say it again, I do believe that Woody Johnson made the right move here, 100% made the right move. Now, I would have removed Nathaniel Hackett, but on top of Rob Saleh, I would just said, you know, it's time to get everybody out of here, and we got to get this out of here, and we got to now start over, and we're good enough to be able to win these games, especially with an injured Buffalo Bills team coming in, who really, unfortunately, I don't even know if Shaquille
Khalil
Shakir is going to play as well. I don't think so, but
They are banged up. They don't have really that much of an offensive threat other than James Cook and, of course, Josh Allen making plays like Joe Burrow made last night. But they're not coming in here like the team that they have been over the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, both James Cook and Shakir still questionable. So that's going to take us right up to game time to find out about those guys.
All right, you got to believe that the Jets are going to, you know, they have to bounce back. And I can't imagine that Aaron Rodgers is going to have another bad game. He's had two bad games. I think that Todd Downing is going to reformulate, reestablish, and push a running mentality, tougher mentality first, and then let Aaron, you know, pick apart the defense, you know, man on man when the Buffalo Bills got 8 men in the box to stop the run.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.